This is The Guardian.
I'm Noor Haider, coming to you from Gadigal land, and this is the full story. The National Disability Insurance Scheme was introduced more than a decade ago, with the promise to transform the lives of people with a disability.
For the first time, they will have their needs met in a way that truly supports them to live with choice and dignity. It will bring an end to the tragedy of services denied or delayed, and instead offer people with disability the care and support they need over their lifetime.
Since then, it's grown to support more than 750,000 Australians. But the NDIS has also faced criticism and scrutiny.
A crackdown has been flagged on price gouging within the NDIS as the government looks to reduce ballooning cost pressures.
In a bid to rein in spending, the federal government recently changed the parameters around how and what people can claim, which has suddenly left families without basic needs.
Now, Guardian Australia can reveal details of a planned major overhaul, under which NDIS funding and support plans will be generated by a computer, with human involvement dramatically reduced.
The human takes all the information they've gathered from the NDIS participant, they put it into the computer tool, the ICAM, and from that point, there isn't any human involvement to change a plan or amend a plan, correct a plan if they think it's come out wrong.
The plan raising concerns among staff and disability advocates.
One advocate I spoke to, who is an NDIS participant as well, called this a nightmare scenario for disabled people. He said that people risked missing out on the supports they need to live full and even just very basically supported lives.
Today, senior reporter Kate Lyons on the sweeping changes coming to the NDIS. It's Thursday, the 4th of December. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Noor.
It's great to have you back on Full Story. You're joining us today to talk about a story that you broke this week for The Guardian about a major overhaul to the National Disability Insurance Scheme. And we'll get to some of the details of that in a moment. But first, when you learnt about these changes, what was your gut reaction?
So a few weeks ago, I came into possession of some audio that it was a recording of a staff briefing session.
I'll just check how we're going. Oh, we've got 338 folk in the meeting, Queensland staff. That's fantastic.
Conducted by NDIS bosses with hundreds of NDIS staff explaining these really massive changes that are going to come into effect for the NDIS next year.
We wanted to bring you together today to bring you all up to speed with where we're at with our important work that we're doing to get ready for new framework planning for introduction mid-next year.
We've known the changes are coming, but we haven't known really much or any of the detail about how it's going to work, and it is going to have a massive impact on the way that NDIS participants' funding and support plans are calculated and delivered to them, which will affect what support they get, whether they can access physio, whether they can get nursing support, all of that. So it was quite revelatory to hear what was being said inside the NDIS to staff about how it would all work and what it would mean for participants. And frankly, I was quite shocked by some of the things that were revealed.
Mm. And we know that hundreds of thousands of Australians rely on this scheme.
Yeah, 750,000.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so what have you uncovered about the changes that the government has planned for the NDIS in the coming months?
So we know that the government has been working towards a new model for determining how NDIS participants' plans are generated. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. There are a lot of people who say the current system isn't working. There's too much room for error. There's too much sort of inconsistency between plans. And so having a new model is not necessarily bad. And we know also that the government has procured a license to use a particular computer program called the ICANN, which is the Instrument for Classification and Assessment of Support Needs, to help it generate those plans. And it's been developed by the University of Melbourne and the Centre for Disability Studies. And it has actually been used across the disability sector for various things, support needs assessments, functional capacity assessments, for 20 years. So it's been around and that's going to be rolled out from mid next year. But for months, the disability sector has been saying, please tell us how it will work. Who will be doing the assessments? How will the plans be calculated? How will the appeal rights work for people? Will we be able to submit independent medical evidence if we don't think our needs have been captured? Please tell us more. And basically this briefing session to staff hit all of those topics, and some of the answers would be very alarming to advocates and people with disabilities.
Okay, so you've obtained this audio from a briefing that was given to staff at the NDIA, that's the National Disability Insurance Agency, where they were told about the sweeping changes that would come into effect and how they would work in practice. What were staff told?
So the big standout thing was that under the new scheme, human involvement will be reduced dramatically in the formation of plans. So at the moment, you have quite a bit of human involvement as well as computer tools to assist the NDIS planners. So they will have conversations with participants, consider medical evidence. They'll use certain computer tools to generate draft funding packages, but they have discretion to amend those or change those or tweak those in light of the person's circumstances after they've been generated. Under the new scheme, what we learnt was there would be human involvement initially in that assessment process, and then the human takes all the information they've gathered from the NDIS participant, they put it into the computer tool, the ICANN, and from that point, there isn't any human involvement to change a plan or amend a plan, correct a plan if they think it's come out wrong. So what the computer produces from that point is the plan, and a human doesn't have the authority to say, no, that looks wrong. What they can do is say, no, I think the assessment that this was based on was flawed or didn't capture a particular need or detail, and they can change the inputs, but the inputs still go back into the computer program, which then generates a plan, which again, a human cannot change. So that's the main and maybe most troubling thing for the disability community, is that what happens if the plans that are being generated aren't good plans? It's not a bad thing to have a computer-based tool to assist with the production of plans. It's actually quite an important thing in helping to standardise support or benchmark support or give a sense to planners of, okay, if you have a kid of this age with cerebral palsy with a particular gross motor function score of 3 and they live in a regional area, what are some of the basic things they will need and what is that likely to cost? That's not a bad thing. That's a helpful thing, and it mitigates a bit of the difference in human decision-making. You know, you might have someone who is very ignorant of a particular condition or inexperienced or, heaven forbid, has some sort of grievance against a particular community. And having that benchmark is really important. But one of the experts I've been talking to who researches automation in sort of public sector delivery has said it is really important to have those computer systems, but what goes wrong is when you don't have a human in the loop, when you don't have that human person sense checking, doing the sort of emotional work with a person, working out the variability of experience, and just being someone to check what is produced by a computer against what is a lived reality or what is just common sense.
And at this briefing, there was a Q&A. Staff did ask questions, and some staff did raise the alarm about this proposed new system. What was said?
Yeah, there were some staff who asked questions and raised some concerns. Firstly, just to clarify what their roles would be in this new model.
I'm going to now open up for you all to ask a few questions, and we'll try to answer those as well as we can.
And in the audio, we have altered the voices of some staff to protect their anonymity.
It wasn't clear who was actually making the decision about funding, like between the assessment and then receiving the plan, like who is actually making the decision on funding? Like obviously it's a planner now, but in this new framework, is it going to be the assessor?
No.
Like if they're approving a plan, does that have any significance or meaning if they have no ability to sort of not approve a plan or to change a plan? One was voicing a concern that if there were needs that hadn't been captured in the assessment, could there be shortfalls in the plan that's generated if there's no other means to capture that or no human moment to say, hold on, this is a unique circumstance?
And I could see the potential for animosity, reputational damage towards the agency.
So just to clarify, NDIA staff, public servants, will input information about an NDIS participant into this system, the ICANN system. It'll then generate a funding package. Once that happens, there is no way for a human to alter it.
That's right. The other concern about it is when it comes to appealing that decision, we have this what seemed to me to be quite a circular closed loop system when it comes to appeal rights. So it was outlined in the briefing by Desmond Lee, who is a senior executive for NDIA Queensland, that participants still have the right to appeal.
On the legal advice, if you're a participant, you have review and appeal rights, okay?
But what will happen is if they don't like their plan or they think the assessment it's based on is wrong, they can appeal. It goes to an internal review.
If you're not happy with that, we go to internal review and we conduct another assessment using our tool, all right?
And what that will mean is instead of another human looking at the plan and saying, yeah, that makes sense to me, or no, it doesn't, as happens now, it will go back into the ICANN tool to be recalculated. They have another crack at internal review within the NDIA, and it will go back into the computer tool to be recalculated. If they want to appeal it to the highest body, which is the Administrative Review Tribunal, which is quite an important thing for NDIS participants, this was the other explosive thing in the briefing. He revealed that he had sought legal advice to clarify how the appeal would work at tribunal and had been told that the tribunal will no longer be able to vary or amend a plan like it does now. So at the moment it can say, yeah, you're entitled to 100 hours of physio a year or whatever it is. Now the tribunal will only have the power to send a plan back to the NDIA to be reassessed and recalculated using the ICANN tool.
The tribunal can order the agency to conduct another assessment. They cannot get an external party or a third party to conduct our assessment. It, by law, it must be conducted by us, okay? We'll have to work out how we do that at that stage, of course.
If that is the case, like if that advice translates to reality, that dramatically reduces the appeal rights of NDIS participants. And that's actually really significant because at the moment, the rate of appeals to the tribunal from NDIS participants is incredibly high. And there was something like a 70% increase in the last year of people appealing their plans, and a very high rate of the plans that get appealed to the tribunal get overturned by the tribunal. So it's something like 70%, again, 73% I think it was for the last financial year, are overturned on appeal by the tribunal. So if the tribunal no longer has the power to vary or amend a plan to put in place supports it thinks is missing, but instead can just send it back to the NDIA to be recalculated by the same computer program that it generated it in the first place, we have this kind of what seems to me a sort of computer says no, computer says no, computer says no situation where there's no moment for a human to intervene and say, is the computer saying no for the right reasons? Should, in fact, the computer be saying yes here? And when I put a series of questions about these issues to the department, an NDIA spokesperson said that the new framework planning model was introduced in order, in response to this year-long review that called for a simpler and more consistent assessment of the needs of participants. They said that it will be fairer, it will be simpler, and it will allow people to access the supports they need. They also really backed in the ICANN as a model and the way it's been used over a long period, the way it's been developed, and said it wasn't an automated system. It's not fair to call it an automated system because the assessments that get fed into the ICANN will be conducted by trained and accredited assessors. And the NDIA also said that they had been listening to the disability community, that more time for consultation would improve the delivery of these reforms. And that's why they were now aiming to introduce the changes from mid-2026.
Okay, so you published this story yesterday. What's the reaction from the disability sector been like, from people living with disabilities? Because we know already that the process for applying for an NDIS package is tedious. It is cumbersome for people who are, in some instances, experiencing and facing multiple disabilities.
The reaction has been really strong and really overwhelming to these revelations. In some ways, it's what people feared. From some of them, they've really been grateful that this information has come to light and confirmed what they were dreading, confirmed what they've been asking the government to reveal to them. One advocate I spoke to, who is an NDIS participant as well, called this a nightmare scenario for disabled people. He said that people risked missing out on the supports they need to live full and even just very basically supported lives, which is what the NDIS is designed for. But the word that has come up quite a few times from a number of disability advocates to me today is robo-planning, that they fear that the increased automation and the decreased human involvement in generating the plans is really dangerous. They've said, you know, they fear it could actually risk the lives of participants if they're not able to get the supports that they need, and then they're sort of closed out of an appeals process that doesn't have a human involved in it in a really meaningful way. Senator Steelejohn, Jordan Steelejohn, who is the Greens NDIS and disability spokesperson, said he was genuinely very alarmed by what the government was planning. He felt that this was an untested assessment process that feeds results into a computer algorithm no one can see. And if the outcome is wrong, people won't be able to challenge it through appeals anymore. And he says, we've seen what happens when governments rush out untested systems. It goes badly and people get hurt.
We'll be right back.
I'm Barry Cassidy.
And I'm Tony Barry.
They say a day is a long time in politics. We've been away a couple of months, so a lot's happened in that time.
We had Spill Vember. The Liberal Party found new ways to fail.
The government got its nature law through.
Barnaby kept on making about it himself. And the big story, the One Nation vote has doubled since the election.
So we're back. Two more episodes of Back to Back Barry's, the podcast.
That's a lot of backs.
Well, it is a lot of backs, but it's done now. Two special episodes before we come back next year. So that's this Saturday and next.
With a special guest on Saturday the 13th of December.
Have a look for us in the full story feed.
So we know, Kate, that the government has been open about the fact that it wants to contain the growth of the NDIS, which already costs more than $50 billion a year, and that's projected to continue growing. When does the government intend to roll this out, and how has it responded to the coverage?
So the plan is for this to be rolled out from mid next year in stages. And the government has said in response to questions from us that they were listening to the disability community, that this was done in consultation. It was done as the result of a year-long review into the NDIS that called for a fairer and more consistent way of determining plans. And this was their response to that. It is a real moment for the NDIS because, as we know, the cost is very high. The word that gets used a lot by the government is sustainability. The sustainability of the scheme is paramount, and the line is, at the moment, it is unsustainable growth, unsustainable budget line item, which does feel code for when every time it comes out for cost cutting. Mm. So, yeah, there are a number of measures that the government has announced this year that are seeking to bring costs down. There are a bunch of measures that the Labor government is looking to introduce that feel very similar to things they opposed very vocally when they were in opposition, or that they pointed to as evidence that the coalition was failing on the NDIS.
I want to pick up on that point because the Morrison government attempted to introduce independent assessments back in 2021. That proposal went down like a lead balloon with the sector.
Yeah.
How does this new plan, Labor's plan, compare?
Well, I mean, in many ways, it's very similar. That plan involved someone sitting down and doing an independent assessment for 3 hours with someone who didn't know them, not being able to submit independent medical evidence, which was a key objection of the sector, and that interview would be a key way of determining their funding plan. Now, this ICAN model may be much better. We don't know quite the detail of what that interview with that independent assessor looked like under the old scheme, or did it, you know, is there more training now? Is there
or
a more
comprehensive?
Exactly. I mean, one advantage of the old scheme is the person doing that assessment was at least an allied health professional, someone with a background in looking at needs, you know, someone who might be an OT or physio or something like that.
Mm.
Whereas now we know that the people doing the assessments will be public servants. There'll be NDIA public servants. There's been an expression of interest call for people who want to step into that assessor role. They will be trained, and they'll be trained using the Centre for Disability Studies training. But that's been a key concern of the sector, that, like, how do you know you're doing the assessment in a comprehensive enough way, that you're asking the right follow-up question, that you're looking for those little things that indicate a functional impairment or a need, even that you're sensitive to the way of doing an assessment like this with someone who might have a profound disability, might have a psychosocial disability, might have huge distrust of the government and the NDIS, like making sure that that assessment is done really well, given how important it is.
Kate, you've reported on the NDIS in the past, on the experience of participants trying to access a funding package, some of the problems that they encounter, other issues around surging costs, the bureaucracy. Where to from here for a scheme that so many Australians rely on?
I mean, I think one of the things that is really striking to me in having spent time talking with dozens and dozens and dozens of NDIS participants and hearing their stories. For people outside the NDIS, I think the assumption is there's a lot of fat to cut. There are a lot of people with really minor, doesn't even count as a disability, disabilities, getting a huge amount of money from the government, and that there are easy wins, low-hanging fruit to cut that. And I'm not commenting on whether that is never the case, or like if that never happens. But a lot of the cuts that I've seen in people's plans are people with incredibly severe, profound, in some cases really life-limiting disabilities. And the supports that are being cut for them are the difference between whether they can ever leave the house or not. In some cases, in one I'm thinking of in particular with a little girl, it's life and death. It's will she die because she doesn't have this particular support, overnight support or not. And I think maybe there's a disconnect in the public perception of what the NDIS is and who it's there for. So I think that's just an important context to have. But having said that, the scheme needs to continue. It's too important not to continue.
Mm.
So sustainability measures, cost-cutting measures, looking at fairer and more consistent ways of determining plans, they are important. It is important the government does this work. It is important it listens to the NDIS review. It really matters to do that. It just matters that we learn lessons of the past about how to do that well and fairly, and how to do that without demonising the people who the NDIS is there to help, and without cutting savagely the help that they need, or producing plans in ways that don't allow for the sort of variation in human experience that we know people have.
Kate, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Noor.
That was senior reporter Kate Lyons. You can find more of her work on theguardian.com, and we've linked to her latest piece on the NDIS on the full story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria and Camilla Hannan, who also did the sound design and mix. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also leave us a review. I'm Noor Haidar. Thanks for listening.